It's time for Pitch Hit and Run, the official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Give the kids in your community a chance to flex their superpowers, and they could earn a trip to the national finals of the 2025 World Series presented by Capital One. So go ahead, be the one who powers their dreams, and sign up to host the local Pitch Hit and Run event. It's a free and fun way to promote baseball, softball, and your organization. To learn more, go to pitchhitrun.com.
It's better over here. After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to four lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device credit service ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
It's Paul Hamilton.
We should be friends.
He has the facts to back up his opinions.
Knuff just pooped his pants.
On WGR Sports Radio 550.
Welcome back, everyone. Zach Jones, Josh Schmidt here until 3 o'clock. No Sabres Live or One Bills Live the rest of the week. No local shows tomorrow for the 4th of July holiday. But it is a big week for hockey. Of course, we had the draft last week leading right into free agency starting on Monday. The Sabres have been a little bit active up to that point, and we've been hearing from some of the players already today. They spoke with the media, and we are joined now on the Wester Hotline by our own Paul Hamilton. Paul, good afternoon. How are we doing today?
Hey, guys. How are you?
Doing very well. So, I might be wrong on this, Paul. Dennis Gilbert's the only player who has spoken up to this point, correct?
Today?
Yes.
Yes. Or right. You mean the guys they signed?
The guys they've signed.
Yes. Later on, a couple of Zooms will be coming up with Zucker and...
Lafferty?
Lafferty.
Thank you.
I'm
surprised I remember your name. So
hey, it's July 3rd. It's okay. It's hot outside.
On Gilbert, what did you hear from that? I mean, he is a local guy coming in. Maybe not projected necessarily to be like one of their top defensive pairings, but at least definitely somebody that, from what the quotes I've seen, does kind of want to bring a little bit more of tough to play against attitude.
Yeah, more the Clifton type of it. Clifton's really the only guy they have that is like that. So he brings something to the table that others don't. And, I don't see him breaking into the top six to start unless there's an injury. And then they may carry eight defensemen and one forward. Right now they have just enough forwards. If they were going to carry one extra forward, he would have to come from the Rochester Americans. From last year, maybe Rusick or somebody like that. But, I could see maybe Bryson and Gilbert also, both being here and as a 7 and 8 defenseman. It's a little clunky to have two extra D and then trying to get them in the lineup from time to time. But it's just that Bryson brings one thing and then Gilbert brings something totally different. So you have some options if you're Lindy Ruff, if you don't like one of the six defensemen, how he's playing, or if you have an injury.
Yeah, I saw a lot of his comments were about his physicality and his ability to fight and things like that. I feel like that's kind of the vibe the Sabres are going for this offseason so far with their signings and the things they've done in the bottom six and now on the defense as well. I just feel like they're trying to be more of a difficult team to play against, right? Is that the Lindy touch, I guess, if you want to call it that?
Absolutely. They said that before Lindy rolled around. I mean, it was rather obvious. I've been talking about this for 2-3 years, and guys like Craig Reve and Andrew Peters have been talking about it even longer, how they just aren't built the right way. And now I think they're starting to be built the right way. I think they did an excellent job with that part of trading and free agency. Malenstein, people were upset they gave up a second round pick. So what? As Kevin Adams said, that's why they went out and got the second round pick. They only went down 3 slots. They knew they could still get a player that they wanted in that spot. And they fully had planned on trading that pick that they had gotten since they had 2 second round picks. They traded their own pick, but you get the idea. They were right in a row in the second round. So, yeah, it was an overpayment, yeah. And I agree with, so what? They needed that type of a player They have enough draft picks and enough prospects. I have zero problem with overpaying for Malenstein. I think what he brings to the table is exactly what they need, as the other two. And I think they've done an excellent job of making themselves more difficult to play against. Unfortunately, I don't think they finished the job as far as what they totally need, but I think they made a huge headway in that area.
So, Paul, on that point, I mean, like that's, you know, and even I was somebody that, you know, kind of checking in and out as I could on Monday, which is, it kind of felt like these were moves the Sabres did need to make, like as you brought, like, and Josh has brought up a lot, like they fixed their bottom six or at least have made it better. But there's kind of this clear need for a top six forward, especially when you've bought out Jeff Skinner. Did he have a good end of the season? No, not particularly. But do you think there is another move coming for the Sabres? Or, at least from the comments I saw from Kevin Adams, do you kind of buy it at face value that maybe like this really is the team they want to go into camp with?
Well, I think he'd like to make another move, but it doesn't sound like there are willing partners out there to trade. As he said, a lot of the trades that he was talking seemed to have set up, or at least a couple of them, that the player hasn't been traded and may not be traded. So, but that's his job. You know, I understand that Buffalo is not a destination after 13 years of not being in the playoffs, but whose fault is that? And Kevin Adams will be the first one to tell you they caused it themselves. That had loosened up last summer, but he made the mistake of thinking, I really don't have to make moves because the guys we have are just all going to get better. And when they all get better, we're going to be a really good team. Well, had they all gotten better, you would have been right. They would have been a really good team, but that didn't happen. Most of them, not all, but most of them regressed. And it was just a huge miscalculation on his part. And now he's trying to fix that, and he did, as I said, with the bottom six. But you put yourself back in the position of, you know, people say, well, why didn't they go after Stamkos or whatever? I'm sure they gave the agent a call, but when Steven Stamkos, Buffalo Sabres, no thank you. You know, that's not even a thought. At this point in his career, he's not coming to the Buffalo Sabres, who haven't been in the playoffs in 13 years. No, I mean, are they going to get better? Maybe with Lindy Ruff, maybe not. Maybe some of their players will start improving again, maybe not. He's not coming to that, and most veterans aren't. So you're back into that spot again, but you've done it to yourself because of the way you played last year. Instead of moving forward with the good young talent, you move backwards, and that doesn't get people here. Even when you're talking, and there's so many players with no movement clauses now, it's ridiculous. I mean, back when, you know, there were times you could make trades even when you were bad because the other team basically had a bunch of players that couldn't block it. Only very, very few had no movement clauses. Now, everybody has a no movement clause, so that screws you up there when you try to make a trade. Or when you have a guy who has 1 year left from free agency and he said, well, yeah, I'll come play for a year, but I'm not signing there, which may have happened along the way here. So that's the spot they've put them in, and it's catch 22. It's like, well, if nobody will come, then how do you get better so people will start coming? Well, they did it before. As I said, last summer people were perfectly willing to come here, but that's what you have to do. So now he's talking about, well, yeah, we're open for business. Once the smoke clears, we'll circle back and take a look. But then he's talking about he really likes his guys, and he has no problem and no doubt that they're going to score goals. I personally think Tage Thompson is more of a 47-goal scorer than he is a 31-goal scorer. But I can't guarantee that. If I were a general manager, I wouldn't stake my reputation on it. Because if it doesn't happen, Kevin Adams is going to be out of a job. So I think it's to a point where he realizes that he's not going to be able to get that forward. Or if he does, it's going to be, you know, circling back, maybe a surprise that, I mean, now maybe something may loosen up from teams that have done a lot of spending. And now that they've done a lot of spending, they may have to make some trades to get under the cap, or you know, those types of trades might still be available. I mean, it's still a couple of months until September. It's not like the season starts tomorrow. And I've always said, you know, talk to me at the end of September, and then we'll talk about, you know, what the team's like and what they've done, what they haven't done, and all those neat things. So We're not there yet, but it certainly doesn't seem all that promising right now, but that doesn't mean it won't happen.
Yeah, absolutely. And me and Josh talked a lot about this yesterday of just like this is the bed the Sabres have made and they've got to lay in it. And it almost seems kind of counterproductive that it's like, well, they can't really trade or necessarily sign any big name players that are going to maybe necessarily move the pulse, but they have to win with the group they have. And you also can't hope that you're going to have another Zach Benson out of this draft class, which we'll get to here in just a minute with development camp going on. But it does kind of just feel like Lindy Ruff is going to have to do a ton with this group, which he very well may, because I'm with you. I think, you know, guys like Tage Thompson are closer to the season 2 years ago than they were last year. But it does feel like it's going to have to be a lot of heavy lifting from Lindy Ruff to get this team back to, for lack of a better word, some sense of credibility in the league's eyes.
And what you're going to find, too, is the Sabres' top six are going to be much more comfortable now that they have a much harder team to play against, a team that other teams can't take advantage of. Before, you could come in and take advantage of the Sabres, and every now and then you get a pushback, but not very often, you know, and teams knew that. They knew they could come in and walk all over this team for the most part. They would get their dander up every now and then, but it wasn't all that much. Now it's going to be different, you know, so, and that makes Thompson more comfortable. That makes, I mean, he knows. I mean, he did drop his gloves and fight a couple of times. Well, he knows that he probably doesn't have to be the guy to do that now. He's got backup. You know, look at Brandon Montour. He's a great example. In Buffalo, he wasn't a tough guy at all. You know, he didn't, because he had no backup. He knew if he got into something, nobody had his back. So he didn't get into anything, and he didn't jump in and help teammates or anything like that. He goes to Florida, he's a whole different player. He's jumping into scrums, he's starting stuff, he's yakking, you know, the whole thing, because he knows he's backed up by a huge amount, almost every guy they've got there. So it will make a difference to the guys in the top six also.
How do these signings affect, like, the timetable of guys like Jiří Kulík and Matthew Savoy and even Isak Rosén? Like, do you see them? I mean, obviously they're not at development camp right now this year, but what is this going to mean for them in terms of getting to the NHL and making an impact?
They're going to have a huge training camp, because what I saw in the playoffs told me none of them are ready. Now Savoy's a different story. He was in junior. Does his junior season, does that translate into the NHL? Is he more ready than the rest of them? I would think probably not, but I won't say for sure. Look what Benson did. So I suppose he might have a chance. You know, they do have room for a top six guy. And if they can't go find one, then, well, is it Savoy? Is it Kulík? Right now, if it's none of them, it's either Zucker, Benson, or Greenway. And I don't think any of them are top six guys right now. Benson, eventually. I suppose Benson actually could become one. He certainly was a big scorer in junior and showed at times he could do it, and he felt his way through it. Maybe after feeling your way through for a season, you're ready to take the next step, and maybe he could do it. But here we go again. If. Everything, if there's no move made, everything is if. And there are too many ifs in the equation. So, Kulík could come into camp, have a great camp, and then step into the top six and, do a great job. So I'm not saying it can't happen. Rosén could maybe do the same thing. He could come in and have a great camp and step into the top six. Savoy could do that. Helenius, he could do that. So, you know, who knows, but it's all if.
Paul, you mentioned him right there, Konstantin Helenius. What have we seen so far in development camp? I know he's already there. Hockey season moves at a lightning pace. These guys were just drafted over the weekend. Now they're already in Buffalo. We've got development camp, I think, today and then ending tomorrow. But what have you seen so far?
Before I get to that, and don't let me forget to get to it, I want to get to this. I spoke to the third-round pick, a Russian winger picked a couple of years ago, Steven Sardarian, who took the college route. You don't see Russians do that all that often. And I chatted with him today, something I'll probably be writing about in the near future. Won't be today because I'll be writing about Gilbert today. But it was a very, very interesting conversation. And I just wanted to say, he told me actually a little news with him. He played 2 years at New Hampshire, and he was transferring to Northern Michigan, and the coaches left. So now he doesn't have a team again. So he did tell me, he goes, I'm still looking for a team right now. He said I should have one in the next week or two. So he was all set at Northern Michigan, but he's no longer there. But it was a very, very interesting story talking to him about reasons for going to college hockey and, you know, really not knowing English even when he got here. And New Hampshire told him, well, you'd probably be better if you go to the USHL, learn some English, play, you know, and a lot of guys who are going to play in college hockey, quite a few, most of them, play in the USHL. It's very rare you get a true freshman. And so he did that, and he was very glad he did, because you got to remember, he comes over here, not only does he worry about hockey, he's got to worry about class. And if your English isn't very strong, you know, you got to go to class. So he was very happy, and his English is strong now. I really enjoyed talking to him. I just wanted to kind of preview that and say that, you know, he is a guy that is looking for a team right now, trying to get back into college hockey. As far as Hellenius, I've liked him a lot. Just watch him in traffic, you know, watch him protect the puck, whether he's on his skates or off his skates. He protects the puck very well. He's a puck hound. You know, if he doesn't have the puck, he's looking for it. Where is it? How do I get it back? You know, he's very good at sensing plays, at developing. I got a guy coming late. You know, it's almost like he's got eyes in the back of his head. He set up McCarthy for a nice goal that way. So there were a lot of things to like. Brody Ziemer was another one from this year's draft. Wow. I mean, he put on a show. What they do is they put the nets at both blue lines facing the center ice dot. So they have a three-on-three in that small area. And they have one guy on each side who's kind of out of bounds that you can feed. And they fed him, and he took a – say hi, Rob.
Hi, Bone. How you doing, Boner?
Rob Ray's running around the arena here. So, you know, he was a guy that he roped a shot from over there, and they put on three gorgeous moves to get goal. He scored four goals in one shift there, and really opened my eyes. He put on a real good show there, 3-on-3 at center ice.
And then is tomorrow the 3v3 tournament? I think it's going to be early in the morning, yes. Correct?
Yes, early in the morning. So, sorry, I couldn't give you more of Rob Ray, but he walked away.
Did he just walk? He just walked right by.
Oh yeah,
he's got a busy day. I can understand that.
He said hello, you know, and
no, that was great. That was funny.
Then just kept walking, so he didn't want to talk. But really, those are the guys. But boy, I'll tell you what, Brody Ziemer. I don't know if he's going to play in the NHL, but he can sure shoot.
I mean, that's a good way to get into the NHL. Paul, before you leave, though, I do want to ask you real quick on some of the now former Sabres who have left, namely someone who could shoot as well, Victor Olofsson going to Las Vegas, and then Zemgus Girgensson, who I think about an hour or so ago did have a post put out to Sabres fans kind of saying goodbye. He goes to Tampa Bay. What did you think of their times in Buffalo? Girgensson's, of course, here for a long time, Olofsson as well, and how do you see them kind of assimilating with their new teams?
I'm not going to lie. I did not think there was a place for Victor Olofsson in the NHL. I know other teams have scouts. I'm like, what have you seen? He was put on every single line, every power play. I mean, he's a shooter, period. He does nothing else to help you win. I mean, he's just a shooter. And, yeah, that's nice. But you got to be able to play in your own zone. You got to be able to win battles along the wall. Just all those things that hockey players need to do. But I was wrong. I mean, he did find it wasn't for a lot of money, but he did find a place in Vegas, and you know, they lost some people, so they saw something that I didn't see. So they do. Their scouts are professionals. I'm not. So they saw something that I didn't see there. So. That's, you know, it didn't surprise me at all. Girgensson's, my guess is, I know the Sabres made an offer to him. I'd almost guarantee you they weren't going to go to 3 years. And he got 3 years from Tampa. Plus you're, I don't know, are you on a better team? I think you're on a team that's going downwards and you lost Stamkos. So, I don't know. I mean, you're on a better team now, but how much longer is that going to be a better team type of a thing? But he got some security, got 3 years, which he wasn't going to get with the Sabres. And I think Sabre fans were looking for a change, and I think he was looking for a change. And unfortunately, there's nothing he can do about it, but he was here for 10 years of the 13-year drought. So he's kind of the face of the drought. Was it his fault? Absolutely not. Is he the type of player they need? Yeah. They had to replace him because he actually is a guy that went to the net. He is a guy that went into the corners, but through no fault of his own, you know, he's been here for most of it. And I think it was time for fans to get a change from him and for him to get a change from the fans here, and I'm sure he'll be very happy in Tampa.
All right, Paul, thank you so much for jumping on with us. I know you're going to be jumping on here at around 3:30 with Mike Shope. Before you go, though, any big plans for the 4th of July?
I hardly even know it's the 4th of July right now. This has been crazy. I mean, with the draft and free agency and development camp, I mean, I don't, as you can tell, I was forgetting names earlier. I mean, it's just like I'm on to the next thing. And then I'm writing, you know, usually you write an article a day. I'm writing like 3 articles a day. I've got one I'm in the middle of, and I'm going to write 2 more later once I've talked to 2 more players. And it's just like go, 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 go. And I've never, this condensed schedule, I'm not complaining. I love my job. But I'm, because unfortunately, starting on Friday, it's going to be, it all come to an end. It's going to go from 100 miles an hour to nothing. But yeah, it's been just insane. So as far as 4th of July, well, we have a 3-on-3 tournament on the 4th of July. That's about all I know. Now, once I get through that and write all those articles, we'll see what time it is. And then I'll say, oh, yeah, it's the 4th of July. What is there something I can do here, or should I just relax? So I have no idea. Normally, living in Lancaster, I'm like a mile from the village. So I'll just walk down to the village, and the Nerds are usually playing down there. And they have, or they may be playing today, and then they have fireworks on the 4th. And they do a whole thing. So I usually enjoy doing that. And but again, just with everything that's been going on, I haven't been able to make any plans.
Hey, well, you know what, though? With a condensed schedule, it might be good. Go to that tournament early and then just kind of kick your feet up the rest of the day and hang out.
Yeah.
Paul, thank you so much.
I'm not complaining. It's hockey.
No, right, exactly.
I love it. So no complaints here.
Paul, thank you so much. We'll hear from you later on today. And have a great holiday weekend.
Yeah, you guys enjoy your 4th. Take care.
That was Paul Hamilton there on the Wester Hotline. And Paul's reports on WGR are brought to you by Equitable Advisors, thinking about today and planning for tomorrow, and by Raylax Honda. Raylax, we got this. I will say, though, Josh, as a fan specifically, not someone that has to write a ton of articles and attend everything and all that, I have really enjoyed the condensed schedule because it's just haymaker after haymaker after
right.
haymaker.
You have so much going on that it's just so much fun. Everything is going on all at once, and you don't have – that's why I prefer the NHL schedule over – or NHL offseason over
the NFL?
NFL offseason, because you get everything all at once, and you don't get, hey, we're going to have a teaser of a schedule – of a teaser of a schedule release.
Oh.
Like, that's what gets me about the NFL schedule is that it's – they. But hey, that's marketing, right? Mm-hmm. Like that's how
they make
you
it. They make it work. They make it work. The NFL's never out of the zeitgeist for long for sports fans. Got to take a quick time out here if you want to jump in the conversation. They're talking about the Sabres. How are you feeling going into this season? I mean, I think all three of us agreed there. Bottom six is better, but it's a lot of ifs for this team. Love to hear your thoughts. 803-0550 is the number to call. Zach Jones and Josh Schmidt here until 3 o'clock, and you're listening to WGR. It's better over
here. After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device, credit, service, ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
It's time for Pitch Hit and Run, the official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Give the kids in your community a chance to flex their superpowers and they could earn a trip to the national finals of the 2025 World Series presented by Capital One. So go ahead, be the one who powers their dreams and sign up to host the local Pitch Hit and Run event. It's a free and fun way to promote baseball, softball, and your organization. To learn more, go to pitchhitrun.com.
back, everyone. Zach Jones, Josh Schmidt here until 3 o'clock. No Sabres Live or One Bills Live the rest of the week, with the 4th of July holiday being tomorrow. No local shows actually tomorrow as well. We'll be back on Friday. Josh, I was listening a little bit. I haven't listened to the entire thing. It's about 2 minutes, but Mina Kimes was talking about the Bills on her podcast, and specifically Dalton Kincaid, and how once they had done the OC switch from Ken Dorsey to Joe Brady, how really she is kind of now seeing Dalton Kincaid through the lens of what he was able to do with Joe Brady as OC as potentially the true Stephon Diggs replacement for the Bills, specifically when it comes to man coverage and how he was able to really excel against man coverage. And it's something that we've talked a lot about this offseason, really since Diggs has been traded, of really what should we expect from Kincaid in season number two. He did have a very successful rookie season, or at least, you know, for Bills tight ends, he's had a very successful rookie season. I think there was a lot left to be desired. He only had 2 touchdowns, so there wasn't a ton there, at least, you know, regular season-wise. But that's kind of like what I've been pointing to this whole offseason, especially when they didn't make any sort of massive moves at wide receiver. Brandon Ayuk, yes, still seems to kind of be out there. We'll see if that's
ever... It seems kind of like it's dying down, though,
yeah,
a little bit.
And I do just kind of expect San Francisco to get that done and to sign him. I do not really expect to see a massive trade come down. And even then, I don't really see the Bills being involved in it, I guess. I really don't. I kind of see, like, I guess the Steelers, but that's only really because they have been the team that's constantly been thrown out there if there is a trade. But regardless, they didn't really make a move that massive, even in the draft. They didn't trade up to go get one of the big-name guys. They actually traded back and were the first pick in the second round. It is a second-round pick. You know, it's not a first-round pick for Keon Coleman.
Mm-hmm.
And it does just kind of have me sitting here going, like, you know, thinking back to last offseason after Kincaid was drafted, and how everything you heard was, he's the best pass catcher in this draft. Everyone loves him. They all think he's going to be more of a receiver than he is a tight end, and he's going to be used kind of in different roles. He's not a traditional tight end. Every buzz phrase and word was being thrown around with him. And we didn't really get to necessarily see it all that much. We did at times, and I would agree with Mina, it was much more when the transition from Dorsey to Brady happened, which is interesting,
yeah,
because it was always touted as like Dorsey's pick.
Well, I was going to say, it's funny because Dorsey seemed to want these two tight end sets and this 13 personnel, and I'm looking at, you know, his breakdown here of game by game, the stats and the numbers, and you see the clear shift after even during the Denver game. I mean, I was at that game. That was the where he scored his second touchdown of the season, and you see the clear shift. Like, there was the game against New England, 75 yards. The game against Cincinnati, 81 yards.
Mm-hmm.
But everything before he's inactive in week 6, week 1, 26 yards. Week 2, 43. Week 3, 3 yards. And the targets, too. I mean, his most targets last year was 11 against Cincinnati in week 9. But the targets he gets with Joe Brady are much more impactful.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's a quality over quantity type situation. And I feel that you're going to see a lot more of that this year now that he has the whole time or the whole offseason to implement his scheme and his system and figure everything out and get the right people around what he wants this offense to be, rather than taking what he had and making it work the best he could. And with Kincaid, the catches, like, we saw him make in terms of the I guess reliability, I think is the way I would put it, is you could just get him the ball and he would catch it. And I think that's where he'll take over for Diggs in that sense, because Diggs was very much the get me the ball and I will catch it, aside from the Kansas City game.
Yeah, but for the most
not
part,
to,
yeah.
not to throw anything there, but you know,
I think it's fair to bring up that he was consistent. Yeah.
Yeah, that's what he was for his whole time in Buffalo. And I think that's what Kincaid showed a lot last year. Because when you look at his targets to reception numbers, there's not that many drops. He had 91 targets, 73 receptions.
Mm-hmm.
For a rookie tight end in his first year in the league, getting targeted quite a bit, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
I would say. I mean, and I remember last year we were sitting here trying to decide how many targets is he going to get. I'd love to hear what we sounded like back then in terms of, our excitement and enthusiasm, but I really don't feel like we were that far off because looking at these numbers here.
It is interesting. I mean, he had 91 targets, 73 catches. I think now, though, you've got to if we're going this route that like he truly is like the Stephon Diggs replacement, it's not Khalil Shakir. It's not necessarily through committee. Mm-hmm. It is like, no, Kincaid's the one, and then everyone kind of falls in where they may. It's got to be around, I think, 120 targets.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
I think he does probably, if we're going based off this percentage then probably pretty darn close to 100 catches.
The low end of his targets should be 100. He should not have less than 100 targets. And, you know, drops, I'm not saying I'd be okay with it, but if he gets 120 targets and he catches 90 of them, I think that's still... That's a decent percentage to have in your sophomore season.
It's a good year. I mean, it's a solid year.
Because it's not like you're slumping, because you're, in terms of, you know, volume that you're getting, you're still catching the large majority of it. Mm-hmm. But obviously, you'd like to see that number close up a little bit as he gets older. But he's going to have a lot more on him this year. Mm-hmm. He's going to have a lot more pressure to be there in big situations.
Yep.
Whereas last year, there were times, yes, he was part of the big situation, but there were four other people ahead of him.
Yeah.
You had even Dawson Knox at times was ahead of him in terms of the focus was on you in this situation, right? Like Diggs was that guy last year. And then you had Davis, and then you kind of had a Shakir, Kincaid, Cook, like a weird little group of three that were your next three.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to be so much different this year because it's going to be Kincaid than everyone else.
It is going to be such a drastic change to the offense.
I think anyway.
Yeah, or at least maybe not a drastic change to the offense, but definitely the personnel. But like for me, it's just when you look at Kincaid, I think it is fair to look at him very positively and take a lot away from the rookie year, but also really want a lot more. Like I look at the touchdown numbers I brought up. He only scored two in the regular season. He did have one in the playoff game against Pittsburgh, but also his yards per target. His yards per target was 7.4 yards. That's just not good enough.
Right. That's got to creep up towards like 10 to 12. I would say if he has 12. Yeah. 12 yards per target next year, mm-hmm. I think that's all you want and more.
Well, because then he really is sort of taking up this role of Beasley, of he's being the slot receiver that maybe you kind of, like, mm-hmm. maybe his rookie year was kind of perceived as like the safety blanket.
Yeah.
But then, like, there's also this feeling of you're getting actual real usage out of Kincaid. Right. I think that was maybe my biggest problem last year, is that it just never felt like Kincaid was going down the field until later on in the season.
But at the same time, too, I think this year, and it's been talked about a lot, of a receiving by committee type mm-hmm. type offense. And if you're getting 7, 8, 9 yards per target, and I think of it as in terms of first downs.
Mm-hmm.
If you're the death by 1,000 cuts, you're moving down the field little by little, and you're controlling the game that way, you're not going to score a lot,
yeah.
but you're going to control the game.
Yeah.
And if he's getting 8 yards per target, 8 yards per catch, that's 2 yards you have to make up mm-hmm. with a great runner in James Cook, a exciting new receiver prospect in Keon Coleman, another slot guy in Khalil Shakir, and you don't know what you're going to get out of Curtis Samuel because he's kind of like that do-all kind of guy. So for me, if these numbers, I obviously want to see the numbers go up, but if his yards go up to maybe 850 and he gets like one or two more touchdowns, but his yards per target increases to 10 yards, I think that's a good season because
I think it's a good season if he's not the number one.
Well, right.
If he's the number one, he's got to be over 1,000 yards, mm-hmm. creeping towards, if not past, 100 catches. The touchdowns have got to go up. I mean, if he only scores 4 or 5, you can argue it because I think Diggs with Bills only had one season over double-digit touchdowns.
How do you feel about receivers or tight ends, people that catch the ball? How do you feel about them when they have, like, crazy receiving numbers, but like 2 touchdowns?
They're Jacoby Myers.
Yeah, but what do you perceive them as in terms of value to the team? Because for me,
not that valuable.
But for my point is for me, mm-hmm. if you're not the one that's getting the ball in the end zone, but you're getting me to the end zone for someone else to do it, that's I perceive that as value. Because you have you're still scoring points, and I know not every drive you'd be scoring points, but you're still scoring at the end of the at the end of the day, and it's not about that one. It's a team sport.
It's got to be, but then it's got to be like elite numbers. Like he's putting up like 120 catches, 1400 yards, and like three touchdowns. Like it has to be a season like that where it's like, oh, we clearly can't replace you. If he's just putting up like 800, 900 yards.
I'm saying in this situation, he's putting up like 1,000 yards, 100 catches, and 4 touchdowns.
I mean, it's definitely an improvement. I'll take it, but I'd still want more.
Yeah. So
especially, again, and a big part of this is where you were drafted. He was a first-round pick.
Mm-hmm. If he was second or third rounder.
With now a huge opening in the offense in terms of how many targets and receptions were on this team that are no longer on this team. There needs to be a lot there. And that's partially why I am nervous about this team is that there just is not any known commodity outside of like Curtis Samuel.
Mm-hmm.
And his known commodity is like, oh, he's a solid receiver.
Yeah.
He's pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really it. Keon Coleman, I love his personality. The highlights that the Bills will show you always look good. They look, you know, he looks smooth. But in college, he couldn't separate very well. So that, of course, is concerning. Looking at the other tight ends, Dawson Knox was a big play guy, but never a volume guy. And there's a lot for me I still want out of this team. And even to your point too of like gets me to the end zone but doesn't score. That's why I think James Cook in a year and a half, 2 years, is super replaceable.
Yeah.
Is because like as nice as it's been, when it came to scoring touchdowns, he dropped a lot of them. And then getting towards, you know, the goal line, they just used Allen. So what is his value?
Well, that's honestly too, we saw that with Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm.
Philadelphia got all the way to the goal line, then did the tush push.
Yeah,
like they didn't need a running back.
But now we've seen with Jason Kelce out and them going to sign Saquon Barkley, I do think there's belief there that we're not going to be able to run that to the success that we've been able to do so for years.
I do want to say though, I'm not sitting here okay with what this offense is. I'm just saying in terms of what this is right now, the reality we are in going into this season, if that was the scenario where Kincaid puts up crazy numbers but doesn't score any touchdowns.
Yep.
With the player personnel they have, fine. That's okay.
Mm-hmm.
As long as someone else is putting the ball in the end zone, I don't care. But I don't want that to be his career. I don't want that to be what the Bills' plan is on offense. But it kind of has to be something like that in a world where you lose your number one and your number two wide receivers. You don't have someone that has number one experience on your roster.
Yes.
And you didn't, no disrespect to Keon Coleman, you didn't draft the top receiver in the draft.
No.
He is a good talent, but he's not the top talent like we saw other teams go and get. So for me, it's get the ball in the end zone and score a touchdown. I don't care who does it.
Yeah.
That's where I'm at for this season is whoever does it, cool, great. If, you know, Keon Coleman is getting hundreds of yards and only has 2 touchdowns, but Dalton Kincaid has 500 yards and like 12 touchdowns, I know these are crazy numbers I'm throwing around.
I'm just stat picking here.
Yes, yeah. I'm just throwing out random numbers. But my point is it doesn't matter who scores as long as you score.
Sure. I mean,
For right now.
Yes.
For right now.
Yes.
Not for a offensive base. Like, that's not how you should run an offense. But for this season, I feel like with the hodgepodge of people you have to just find out what works. And if this works 1 week, but the next week it doesn't, then so be it.
Mm-hmm. It's going to be interesting. I can't wait for camp just to see how everything's being used, how we're starting to see that offense kind of form as well. Because there's a lot of unknowns even in the receiving corps that they go get. Chase Claypool, somebody that no one really knows what's going to happen there. MVS is another guy as well. You kind of know why they brought him in, but is he really any good? Is he going to be used at all really by this team? KJ Hamler, another guy as well. It's a lot of unknowns. It's kind of a similar spot like the Sabres where, you know, the only difference there is you have Allen and at quarterback that kind of makes it you feel okay, pretty solid about him. But, man, there's a lot of that offense I'm just like, at least in terms of this year, very, very nervous about. Got to take a quick time out here. 803-0550 is the number to call if you'd like to join the show. Zach Jones, Josh Schmidt here until 3 o'clock, and you're listening to WGR. Welcome back, everyone. Zach Jones, Josh Schmidt here, covering Sabres Live and One Bills Live for the rest of the week. They'll be off for the 4th of July holiday, which, of course, is tomorrow. No local shows tomorrow. We'll all be back on Friday. But we do have some kind of cool news here that I think is just breaking down in the last few minutes. That is Jessica Campbell is now the first ever full-time female assistant coach in NHL history as she becomes the assistant coach for the Seattle Kraken, joins former Sabres head coach Dan Bylsma and his staff there in Seattle. Very, very cool. I've done 2 seconds of looking up kind of where she's been. I think she was with the Coachella Valley Firebirds, which is Seattle's minor league team.
It would also make sense that she got promoted with Dan Bylsma because she was on his coaching staff.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously he likes what she did in the AHL, so that's pretty cool.
Yeah, she was there for 2 years. She was hired in July of 2022 to be their assistant coach there, and even there, she became the first woman to be employed on a full-time basis behind the bench in the AHL. So she's just kind of been moving, and she was part of Dan Bylsma's staff there. He was the head coach of the Coachella Valley Firebirds, I think, for the last 2 seasons. So she's kind of just, you know, she's been a part of his staff. She's moving forward, so that's really, really cool to see. And I believe she's played in a number of women's competitions as well, Nations Cups, World Under 18 Championships, World Championships as well. So very much has been, you know, in hockey for her entire life as well.
A fun one, too, also hockey related.
Mm-hmm.
There are 18 former junior Sabres in development camps around the NHL.
Oh.
6 of them are in Buffalo.
Oh, okay.
The others are in Anaheim, Dallas, L.A., San Jose, Toronto, Philadelphia, Detroit, and Colorado. Oh, and the Rangers.
All right. So, all right.
Junior Sabres getting around the league. Yeah. That's pretty cool.
It has helped, and that's kind of been a thing that it feels like almost every year we have a prospect in the draft that is like a former junior Sabres. So that's been really, really cool the last few years to see that.
I think it's interesting. Yeah.
All right. We got to take a quick time out here. When we come back, I want to talk some 4th of July traditions. We have not really touched on the 4th yet. I am somebody that very much has traditions. Want to hear if Josh does as well. Would love to hear yours as well. 803-0550 is the number to call, with the 4th of July holiday being tomorrow. And we'll do that when we come back after a quick timeout. You're listening to WGR.
Now with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Tip, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
It's better over here.
Now at T-Mobile, get 4 5G phones on us and 4 lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phones via 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on a required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
Welcome back, everyone. Zach Jones, Josh Schmidt here, covering Sabres Live and One Bills Live for the rest of the week. They'll be off for the 4th of July holiday, which, of course, is tomorrow. No local shows tomorrow. We'll all be back on Friday. But we do have some kind of cool news here that I think is just breaking down in the last few minutes. That is Jessica Campbell is now the first ever full-time female assistant coach in NHL history as she becomes the assistant coach for the Seattle Kraken, joins former Sabres head coach Dan Bylsma and his staff there in Seattle. Very, very cool. I've done 2 seconds of looking up kind of where she's been. I think she was with the Coachella Valley Firebirds, which is Seattle's minor league team.
It would also make sense that she got promoted with Dan Bylsma because she was on his coaching staff.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously he likes what she did in the AHL, so that's pretty cool.
Yeah, she was there for 2 years. She was hired in July of 2022 to be their assistant coach there, and even there, she became the first woman to be employed on a full-time basis behind the bench in the AHL. So she's just kind of been moving, and she was part of Dan Bylsma's staff there. He was the head coach of the Coachella Valley Firebirds, I think, for the last two seasons. So she's kind of just, you know, she's been a part of his staff. She's moving forward, so that's really, really cool to see. And I believe she's also, she's played in a number of women's competitions as well, Nations Cups, World Under 18 Championships, World Championships as well. So very much has been, you know, in hockey for her entire life as well.
A fun one too, also hockey related. Mm-hmm. There are 18 former Junior Sabres in development camps around the NHL.
Oh.
Six of them are in Buffalo.
Oh, okay.
The others are in Anaheim, Dallas, L.A., San Jose, Toronto, Philadelphia, Detroit, and Colorado. Oh, and the Rangers.
All right. So, all right.
Junior Sabres getting around the league. Yeah. That's pretty cool.
It has helped, and that's kind of been a thing that it feels like almost every year we have a prospect in the draft that is like a former Junior Sabres. That's been really, really cool the last few years to see that.
I think it's interesting. Yeah.
All right, we got to take a quick time out here. When we come back, I want to talk some 4th of July traditions. We have not really touched on the 4th yet. I am somebody that very much has traditions. Want to hear if Josh does as well. Would love to hear yours as well. 803-0550 is the number to call with the 4th of July holiday being tomorrow. And we'll do that when we come back after a quick time out. You're listening to WGR.
Now with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Tip, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission. It's better
over here. After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device, credit, service, ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.